Welcome to the deep dive. We know you're busy, so we're here to give you that essential shortcut, getting you up to speed quickly and thoroughly on key events.
And today, we're definitely diving deep into a really concerning security breach. It's one that highlights a major vulnerability in how modern software gets built.
We're talking about the software supply chain, specifically the risks baked into relying on open source code packages.
That's right. We'll be looking at the world of NPM, the Node Package Manager, and a breach that wasn't, loud or obvious. It was quiet, stealthy.
Patient, even, and incredibly effective.
Yeah, this incident centers on a malicious package.
Yeah.
It was designed specifically to impersonate a legitimate one called Postmark MCP.
And this wasn't your typical smash and grab attack, was it?
Not at all. This was slow, sophisticated. It was really about eroding trust over time, and that led to the silent theft of thousands, maybe more, sensitive emails.
We're talking password resets, financial details, confidential business comms.
Exactly. Direct access.
So our mission for you, the listener, is pretty clear. We want you to understand not just what happened, but how to actually defend yourself against the next attack like this.
We need to unpack the mechanics, pinpoint the maybe subtle red flags that were actually there.
And discuss some really concrete strategies for protecting your own development environments.
The big question we're tackling here is, how did one single, seemingly tiny update to a dependency package lead to this kind of systematic data theft, stealing really critical information?
It really sounds like a masterclass in deception. And you mentioned the impact comes from the target they picked. Before we get into the attack timeline, maybe we should set the stage. Talk about this model context protocol, or MCP.
Yeah, absolutely. That's key. Because with AI becoming so central to everything,
Right, it's everywhere now.
these kinds of systems like MCP are popping up all over the place.
Okay, so for those of us maybe not living and breathing AI development daily, can you break down MCP in simple terms? What is it really?
Okay, think of MCP like this. It's sort of like a restricted driver's license and an instruction manual combined, but for an AI. And it's all standardized. See, AI models are powerful, right? But you don't want them just wandering around your production systems doing whatever they want.
Definitely not.
So MCP is an open standard. It gives AI assistants a controlled, predictable, and hopefully secure way to talk to external services, things like APIs, databases, payment systems.
Ah, so it's more than just sending messages back and forth. It's fundamentally about standardizing permissions and security for when AI needs to take autonomous action.
Precisely. It governs how an AI can act. So if an AI needs to do something in the real world, like send an automated email notification to a customer, it uses MCP to handle that interaction safely.
Gotcha. And that brings us to Postmark.
Exactly. Postmark's a well-known, very trusted platform for email delivery, and they offer MCP server functionality. This specific package, the legitimate one, lets developers easily plug Postmark's email capabilities into their AI apps.
Right, for things like automated customer engagement, notifications, high privilege functions.
High privilege is the key phrase there.
And that inherent trust and capability is what made this Postmark MCP package such a, well, a prime target for attackers, didn't it?
Absolutely a five-star target. Because if you compromise the AI's main communication channel, especially for something sensitive like email,
You're not just stealing data anymore.
no, you're hijacking its voice. You're hijacking its access to really critical user pathways like password resets or financial alerts.
Wow. Okay. So the risk profile is huge.
It really is. When that package gets compromised, the attacker basically bypasses traditional security. They're not just stealing source code, they're immediately grabbing hold of operational capabilities.
And they're doing it by leveraging the trust that developers, kind of have to place in the software supply chain just to get their jobs done.
That's the core of the high stakes risk here, exploiting that necessary trust.
Okay, so let's unpack the attack itself. The security researchers at Koi Security, they mapped this out. And you said it wasn't quick, it was more like a marathon.
Definitely a marathon. It had two very distinct phases, and the defining characteristic was patience. Remarkable patience.
Phase one, then, the trust building phase.
That's right, the long con. This phase lasted for months, and during this whole time, the malicious package they published, it was completely clean, inert, perfectly functional.
Just sat there working fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And get this, they pushed 15 consecutive versions.
15. Wow.
Yeah, from version 1.0.1 all the way up to 1.0.15. The code was basically identical to the real Postmark MCP implementation.
Okay, hold on. 15 clean versions. That's a massive amount of effort just to build a fake identity, isn't it? I mean, is that really necessary just for automated detection evasion, or does that kind of activity itself start to look, well, suspicious?
That's a great question. It is a lot of effort, but it serves a specific purpose against automated scans. Those scans often look for known malicious code right now.
Wow.
By pushing clean versions repeatedly, the package starts to look like a normal, actively maintained, open-source project. It builds a history.
So it's about behavior, not just the code itself at that point.
Exactly. Developers install it, maybe version 1.0.5. They use it, deploy it, no problems. Then 1.0.6 comes out, looks fine, they update. Still no problems.
So it normalizes its presence. It gets embedded in build scripts, config files.
Precisely. It accumulates downloads, gets integrated into workflows. That pattern of trust, built over months and multiple safe updates, is absolutely crucial for the second phase to work.
Okay, the groundwork is laid, trust established, then comes phase two, the malicious transformation.
Right. Version 1.0.16 appears. And for any developer watching, it probably just looked like another routine update. Maybe a small bug fix after all those stable versions.
The Trojan horse moment, as you said.
That's exactly it. And here's where it gets, well, really interesting from a technical standpoint.
Yeah.
In version 1.0.16, the attacker introduced just one single line of code.
One line after all that buildup.
One line. That tiny change created the entire backdoor mechanism.
Incredible. What did that one line actually do?
It was deceptively simple. It basically hooked into the email sending process and quietly created a copy of every single email that the MCP server handled.
Every email.
Every single one. And it forwarded that copy to an external email address controlled by the attacker. It was a perfect silent intercept.
Wow. But you mentioned earlier there was a flaw, something in their execution.
Yeah, this is fascinating. The receiving email address they set up, it was hosted at giftshop.club. Well, it was linked directly back to the same developer account that published all 15 clean versions and then the malicious one.
Wait, seriously, after months of meticulous planning, building this fake history, pushing 15 versions, they linked the stolen data email directly back to their own publishing account. That seems like a huge operational security mistake, like a fundamental blunder. Was that just carelessness? Or maybe they thought no one would dig that deep, calculated risk.
It really highlights a tension you often see in these kinds of attacks. You've got the technical sophistication for the long con, the patient buildup,
Right.
but then the OPSEC, the operational security around managing their infrastructure, covering their tracks, it can be surprisingly flawed.
Huh.
In this case, that direct link between the receiving email and the publisher account, that's exactly what let the security researchers at Koi rapidly confirm the connection once they found the malicious code. It was basically irrefutable proof.
So the long con was potentially undone by, well, short-sighted planning on the back end.
It's a common pattern, actually. Complex technical exploit, but simpler OPSEC failures give them away. A lesson there, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe a lesson in what not to do for aspiring digital villains. Okay, so let's pivot to the damage, this malicious version, 1.0.16. How long was it out there, and how many people actually downloaded it?
It was active for about 1 week before it was caught and removed, and during that week, it logged roughly 1,500 direct downloads from NPM.
Okay, 1,500. In the grand scheme of NPM downloads, that might not sound enormous.
Right. But that number is incredibly misleading. We absolutely have to talk about the multiplier effect.
Because one download doesn't equal one person affected.
Not even close. That 1,500 represents unique installs in potentially many different places. Development machines, sure. But also automated build systems, staging environments, maybe even production servers.
Continuous integration pipelines?
Exactly. CI/CD systems that might trigger builds and deployments automatically. Each of those systems could be processing hundreds, maybe thousands, of emails or transactions daily.
So the actual volume of compromised emails is far higher.
Oh, much higher. Security experts estimate it's easily in the thousands, possibly tens of thousands, over that 1 week window.
And the content of those emails, we touched on it, but let's really break down the categories. What kind of high-stakes data are we talking about here? Focusing on the real-world impact for, for you listening.
Okay, we can group the compromised communications into about five really severe categories. First, and maybe the most immediately dangerous, authentication credentials.
Like password resets.
Exactly. Think about it. Systems use Postmark or similar services to send password reset links, two-factor authentication codes, login verification messages.
So the attackers basically got an automated feed of account takeover tools.
Precisely. for potentially countless services, social media, cloud platforms, banking apps, straight path to hijacking accounts.
That's immediate devastating potential right there. Okay, what's category two?
Second is financial communications. This includes things like bank transaction notifications, payment confirmations, maybe even digital copies of statements being emailed.
Fuel for identity theft and fraud.
Absolutely. This data is gold for sophisticated attackers building profiles for high-value identity theft or financial fraud schemes.
Then there's the personal angle.
Right. Third is personal sensitive information. Just private emails, you know, confidential discussions between colleagues, maybe sensitive customer interactions if the system handled those. A huge privacy breach.
Could lead to extortion, public embarrassment.
All of the above. And then moving into the business realm.
The corporate risk.
Category four, business intelligence. Since this package could be integrated into company systems, it likely captured internal corporate communications, discussions about projects, strategic plans, maybe proprietary info.
So industrial espionage risk.
Significant risk, yeah. And finally, number five, if businesses were using this compromised package for customer engagement, then customer data itself was exposed. Customer email addresses, maybe summaries of their interactions or support tickets. That opens up massive compliance headaches like GDPR and huge reputational damage.
Okay, this is bad. The scope is huge. Which brings up that crucial question again. If the stakes were this high and the attack played out over months, what were the warning signs? What could developers who are always under pressure realistically have spotted?
That's the key takeaway, isn't it? There were signs, but they require a shift in how developers approach dependencies. There are about three main red flags here.
Okay, number one.
The first, and probably the most critical, package verification issues. This malicious postmarked MCP package was not published through any of Postmark's official NPM channels or accounts.
Ah, so it was impersonating the name, but not the official publisher.
Exactly. If you're integrating a tool, especially something high privilege tied to a major vendor like Postmark, step one has got to be verifying the publisher's identity. Check their profile, look for official documentation linking to that specific package. Never just trust the name.
That seems like basic hygiene, but I can see how it gets missed in a rush.
Okay, what about the update pattern we discussed? The 15 versions.
That's the second flag. Rapid undocumented version iterations. Seeing 15 versions pop up relatively quickly, especially without clear release notes or rationale in a public repo.
Followed by a sudden jump to 1.0.16.
Right. That's an unusual, kind of erratic development pattern. Legitimate, healthy open source projects usually have public issue trackers, pull requests, documented releases, maybe a roadmap. This rapid undocumented churning, that should raise eyebrows.
It felt synthetic.
Synthetic, yeah. And that connects to the third flag, doesn't it? Which is the lack of real interaction around the package.
Exactly. Minimal community engagement. Genuine open source projects, especially popular ones, tend to have some buzz. Questions on Stack Overflow, GitHub issues being opened and closed, pull requests from contributors.
People discussing it.
Right. This malicious package. It was basically a ghost.
Yeah.
Maintained by one single silent account. No real issues filed, no pull requests, no discussion. That lack of transparent community activity is often a sign that a project isn't widely used, vetted, or perhaps isn't what it claims to be.
Okay, those are clear flags in hindsight. So let's turn this into action. For everyone listening, developers, security teams, organizations, what are the concrete prevention strategies? How do we stop this happening again?
We definitely need to move beyond just hoping developers spot these things. We need more systematic controls, maybe a bit more conviction in the process. First up, strict package source verification.
Making that check mandatory.
Yes. Internal policies, maybe even tooling, that require verification of the publisher profile, checking for official endorsements or known ownership chains, especially for anything touching sensitive data or external APIs. It has to be a non-negotiable step before approval.
Okay. And given the attack vector was just that single line of code, code review seems essential, but reviewing every single line in every patch for hundreds of dependencies, that feels impossible, right?
It is impossible manually at scale, which is why we need automated and targeted code review. We can't rely on humans catching every subtle trick.
So tools.
Yes. Use security scanning tools during the build process that are specifically configured to look for common red flags introduced in dependency updates. Things like unexpected network calls to weird domains, attempts to access the file system inappropriately, use of dangerous functions like evil.
So you focus the review automatically on the highest risk changes.
Exactly. Treat every dependency update, even a patch version, as a potential security incident until proven otherwise by automated checks.
That makes it more scalable. Okay, what about monitoring after installation?
Dependency monitoring and behavioral flagging. This is crucial. You need tools that track your dependency tree and their behavior over time.
Like runtime protection?
Sort of. It's about knowing your baseline. If a package like this one, which was clean for months, suddenly in version 1.0.16, starts trying to make outbound connections to a new unknown domain, like giftshop.club.
The system should scream bloody murder.
Precisely. Or if it suddenly tries to read files it never needed before or asks for new system permissions. Those behavioral changes post-update need to trigger immediate alerts and potentially block deployment.
Makes sense. And finally, limiting the potential damage if something does slip through.
Yes. Sandbox testing and least privilege. This is fundamental. New package versions must be tested first in isolated sandboxed environments. These environments should have zero access to real production data or credentials.
Test the blast radius before it's live.
Exactly. And related to that is the principle of least privilege for the application using the package.
Yeah.
Does your AI tool really need broad network access? Or does it just need to talk to the Postmark API?
Restrict its capabilities.
Restrict everything. Ensure the application, and therefore any compromised dependency within it, operates with the absolute minimum permissions necessary to function. If the package can only send emails via the approved channel and do nothing else, its ability to exfiltrate other data is drastically reduced.
Mm.
And of course, regular security audits, especially for these high privilege components, are just non-negotiable.
Okay, if we zoom out now, connect this specific incident to the bigger picture. What does it tell us about the systemic vulnerabilities we're facing?
Oh, it lays bare several critical issues. First, the incredible fragility of the software supply chain. We rely so heavily on fetching code automatically from repositories like NPM. That trust is the attack surface.
It's being actively weaponized.
Constantly. It also really highlights the ongoing package manager security gaps. NPM, PyPI, others. They're getting better, but they still struggle with preventing sophisticated impersonation attacks like this one. Stronger publisher verification is needed at the platform level.
And the AI angle adds another layer of risk entirely.
It really does. The AI integration risk is maybe the most forward-looking concern here, because AI assistants are often designed for autonomous operation.
They just do what the code tells them.
Exactly. They're meant to execute commands via protocols like MCP automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So if the underlying package is malicious, the AI executes the malicious command perfectly. There's no human in the loop double checking or feeling suspicious.
So a single line of bad code doesn't just steal data. It could potentially hijack autonomous actions.
That's the terrifying evolution.
Yep.
The impact gets amplified significantly.
Which makes the immediate action items for anyone potentially affected absolutely critical. Let's be very clear. If you or your organization might have used any version of this Postmark MCP package, what do you need to do right now?
First step, immediately check your project's configuration files. That's usually package.json and potentially package-lock.json for node projects. Look specifically for Postmark-MCP 1.0.16.
Find that specific version.
Yes. If you find version 1.0.16, you need to remove that malicious package immediately. Then find the legitimate package, likely published under Postmark's official account, and install that instead, making sure it's from a verified source.
Okay, remove and replace. What's the most crucial cleanup step after that, given the nature of the data theft?
Total key and credential rotation. You absolutely must assume that any sensitive information sent via email through that system during the compromised week was intercepted.
Assume breach.
Assume complete breach for that period. Rotate all relevant API keys, especially any Postmark keys. Change passwords for any accounts that had reset links or 2FA codes sent via email by that system.
And enable stronger security going forward.
Definitely. Enforce multi-factor authentication wherever possible on connected services. And closely monitor accounts for any suspicious activity in the coming weeks and months.
Right. So that brings us towards the end of this deep dive. It really was a remarkable case study in, well, in patience and deception. Months of trust building, all exploited by one tiny surgical update.
And it underscores that relying solely on the platform like NPM to catch these things quickly isn't enough. It took about a week for the package to be removed here. Damage was already done.
So what does this all really mean for us?
I think it means the threat landscape is constantly evolving. We're moving beyond just finding bugs in code to sophisticated supply chain engineering. Exploiting trust, exploiting developer behavior.
Our defense has to evolve too.
Exactly. Our internal processes, our tooling, our vigilance, it all has to level up to match the attacker's sophistication.
Ooh.
We need to build defenses, assuming this kind of attack will happen again.
Which leads us perfectly into our final provocative thought for you to consider. We saw in this case how one line of code could silently steal emails. But think about the future.
Yeah, as AI systems get even more deeply woven into operations, using protocols like MCP to control real-world actions.
Actions like financial transactions, physical access control, critical infrastructure adjustments.
What happens when that single malicious line of code doesn't just steal data, but actively instructs the AI to subtly change its automated decisions?
Like silently rerouting payments, or slightly altering safety parameters, or granting unauthorized access executed autonomously by the AI based on compromised code.
That's the next frontier, isn't it? Hijacking not just data, but hijacking the AI's operational capability and decision-making. That's the supply chain risk we are truly entering now. Something to definitely keep an eye on.